welcome to season 3 of the Mindfulness Pilates podcast. I'm Beverly Densham, Pilates teacher of over 23 years. I really look forward to bringing you tips to reduce back pain, to feel good, relaxation, positive affirmation, and inspiration every week to inspire you in body and mind. For more relaxation, stretching, core stability, back strength, and happiness. So I'm very excited. Today's podcast, we are going to talk all about the Happy Me Project. And I have the very lovely Holly Matthews joining us today. So welcome, Holly.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here in the very, very hot UK weather right now. I feel like I'm like sweating as we do this podcast. It's very, very warm for the listeners that are listening. Just if you need a visual as well, I look sweaty as well. So that's a nice start to the podcast.
Yeah, well, it's a heat wave and we are so not used to it, are we?
We're not, we're wimps. And I love it. I'm not complaining about this. I genuinely love it. It's just that it's very, very warm. So if we start going a little bit like confused with our speaking, it's the heat. That's what's getting to our brain.
And if I cut it short, I'll say, sorry, Holly, I'm off for a swim in the sea. I'm joking. So I'm going to share a little bit more about Holly before we delve into the conversation today. So here we go. The lovely Holly. Holly Matthews is a life coach, NLP practitioner, and former television actress. In 2017, she lost her husband to a rare form of brain cancer and became a single parent to their two children at the age of 32. Holly has since founded her award-winning self-development brand, The Happy Me Project, and is obsessed with helping people feel more happy and less crappy.
So, exactly that is my mission. And I genuinely am obsessed with that mission. I don't, you know, we're not here for that long on this planet. And whatever you believe about an afterlife, whether you do or you don't, I personally don't. So to me, this is it. And I've got to use it in a very wise way and soak it up. And that to me, when I see people struggling with being able to navigate that and being able to find their joy, That is my driver. You've got to find good stuff in amongst all of the challenges that we will face. And I think that motivates me to get up every day.
Yeah, that's right. And we were really lucky to connect with each other, and as well as your congratulations, obviously, on your brand new book, The Happy Me Project, No Nonsense Guide to Self-Development. So congratulations.
Much. It's very exciting. Yes, we connected because we've both got businesses. We are in a group, aren't we? That kind of helps us to learn about promoting our businesses and with journalists and press and that kind of stuff. And we connected when I reached out and said that I needed people to come in and share their expertise in the Happy Me Project membership. So there's a membership attached to the book and the brand, where I work with clients regularly on their mindset. It's essentially like a gym for the mind. We work on our in different forms of coaching each day. And I'm always keen to bring in guests who have a different skill set to me, have a different angle, I guess, at approaching happiness and what that looks like. So of course you were invited in and you did a fabulous Pilates session for us. And yeah, it was brilliant. So it was lovely to connect in that way. And I think that's always lovely, you know, in the work that I do and that you do, it does open us up as we are exploring things for ourselves and for our clients. We do get put in, we have these connections with other people that give us another little piece of the jigsaw as we're working through our own stuff. And, you know, it's lovely to connect in that way.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Yeah. And thank you for having me in your beautiful membership and, you know, to obviously help your clients too. Now tell us a bit more about you and your journey that's got you to here.
Yeah, of course. So if we go way back when, I started out at 11 years old as a TV actress. And I think that really was one, it was the start of me growing up quite quickly. And it was the time when I learned about purpose, when I learned to navigate challenges that perhaps my peers weren't facing. So suddenly I went from a normal girl living in a, you know, normal working class area in Newcastle to being the girl off the telly, being that person that had this platform in a time when people didn't have platforms. You know, these days, everyone's got a platform. They've got social media or a YouTube channel or something, but it's much more in the open. Whereas in the early 90s, you know, it was 97, I think, when I started on TV. People didn't have platforms. It was a big deal to be on television. It was a big deal to be watched by, I think, about 3 million, millions of viewers. Like, that was a big deal. If I talk to my kids now, my kids are 11 and 9, about being on television, they're like, so? Who's not? Like, who's not being on TV? Like, they don't see it, and it doesn't have the same prestige. So for me, suddenly I was in this different space. I was pitted as different. I felt different. I always felt different to my peers. And so I learned about self-development in a time when nobody was talking about self-development. And I didn't really, you know, we barely had the internet. And, you know, I was going to the library and finding things out and exploring, why did I feel crap? Like, and I had a lovely family. I didn't have a traumatic childhood. Mm-hmm. I had a great family. Like, my parents are very open, liberal people who encouraged me and my sister to be whoever we wanted to be. And I'm very lucky that that's still the case, that even with all the carnage that I bring to the table, which I do, they support that. And I was very lucky, but I suddenly got put in a different world to my peers. And that did bring with it a lot of challenges, you know, whether that was, I was massively body dysmorphic. Like, I really disliked everything about the way that I looked and could have told you a long, long list of plastic surgeries that I was going to get once I reached adulthood. I literally thought I was an ogre going out into the world, and that everybody would faint when they saw me. That didn't feel good. That didn't feel nice. And again, I started to work on, how do I not feel like this? Because this doesn't feel good. But I was always interested in it. And I did it. So I left that TV show. I went on to do different acting things. I was signed to Sony at 19. So I released a single. I was doing what I'd set out to do. When I was really young, I used to affirm every day before I knew what affirmations were. I am an actress. My name is Holly and I am an actress. I never doubted that. There was no doubt in my mind that that was happening. And even when my first audition I didn't get, I didn't think, well, that's me now, that's me done. I thought, well, then that proves you can get into an audition. I'll do that again. I'll get the part next time, which is, well, I didn't even have to audition the next time. Actually, they wrote a part in for me, so that didn't even happen. But there was no doubt in my mind, because as children, if we are encouraged and we have that right support system, we don't doubt. Nobody can tell us we can't have those things. And I went into the world like that. And I really genuinely still have that as well. Like, I think a lot of those things I didn't let go of, that sense of playing and childishness, I guess, in that I do kind of think life is a big game still. But I was always doing self-development stuff. I didn't think it would be it wasn't my plan for that to be my work. I'd chat about anybody who would listen about all of the things I was learning, but I never thought it would be my work. And I possibly didn't even see the link between acting and mindset work, which is a huge link. As an actor, my job is to learn about a character, understand that character's brain, and then pretend to be that character. As a coach, my job is to learn about my clients, understand where their perspective might be coming from, and then help them with tools to navigate that. I now just don't pretend to be my clients, but there's such a huge crossover in that world. In 2014, my husband Ross was diagnosed with brain cancer. In 2017, as you said at the beginning, my husband died of brain cancer. That time was really pivotal for me in that it shifted my journey and it shifted my path. In that, I'd say possibly slightly before that, actually, if I'm being very honest, when I had children, that tends to make your path shift slightly anyway. And I was considering, I guess, that acting in the entertainment industry had less of a grip on me because there was also other people that needed relied on me. When it was just me, I could be obsessional in my hyper-focus, which was being an actress. I could lean into that. It didn't matter. Once you have children, that is slightly different. I couldn't just instantly jump to go to London the next day for an audition. But when my husband was diagnosed, I just had this weird moment of this, I guess, this clarity of mind and shift in my perspective, in that I literally just thought, I don't know why I ever wanted to be an actor. I have no idea. I can't even bring it to mind. I have no idea, because all I want to do right now is be here with my family, love, connection. That's all that matters. And that was such an honest, raw reaction. And it surprised me because I, you know, if you've got this model of the world up until a certain point in your life, and then suddenly the rug is taken from under you, and I'm absolutely within no doubt in my mind, people listening to your podcast will have been in that position, whether it's illness or ill health or grief or what, relationship breakups, job losses, something puts you on this new path. And I was in that space. And again, it was a very organic crossover. I was still doing bits and pieces. I've always been very entrepreneurial. And I started to talk about how I was navigating this new position we were in with my husband having brain cancer, started talking about the world of self-development, started talking about stuff I knew. And I just naturally found people gravitated towards what I was saying. And I guess my biggest selling point, or my biggest, the thing that I guess sets me apart in some respects, is my, not just obsession with helping people, but my obsession with trying to make it simple. I don't think that we need complicated stuff when we're in our shit moments. Like, I just don't think we do. And so I started to talk about it, and then my entrepreneurial brain kicked in and I was like, well, maybe this is the new stage. Maybe I go into this work and I actually, I love it. I'm obsessed with it. Like, I love doing this. This will be the new thing. And over those years of my husband being ill, I was working on different things. When he died was when the Happy Me project was birthed. And it was very much birthed out of the fact that so many people's eyes were on our story. So it was across national press when he died. Every day it was in the newspaper somewhere. And there was a lot of, you know, there was literally paparazzi at his funeral, which was, it was intrusive in many ways, but there was just something honest about it. And it meant I didn't have to talk about it ever. Like, it took me a long time before I ever had to say to somebody that Ross had died. Everywhere I went, everybody knew, which was weird, but also a blessing in some respects. I just never had to say those words. But because of that, people were coming to me and asking, how the hell are you navigating that? Which is on paper, awful. And I can't deal with the fact that, like, my house is a mess and I feel shit because the kids are playing up. And so I did what I do, which is to channel my pain into something good. You know, there's a song, and someone's going to know, and the line is in it, it's going to come to me, who sings it as well. Every day, every hour, turn your pain into power. Who was that by? I can't think of the song. But anyway, and that sticks with it in my mind. Every day, every hour, turn your pain into power. And that's something that's a useful tool for me. So I put together the Happy Me Project self-study course. That was the first thing that it was. It was a 21-day audios, videos. It was £30. I pushed it out into the world. No fancy launch, nothing big push. Just, that's what I do so I don't lose my mind. And there was, suddenly I found that people gravitated towards what I was doing. Suddenly I was seeing hundreds and then thousands of people come towards the Happy Me Project and what I was doing. And that's how it was birthed. So it wasn't a linear process necessarily, but I think really, if I look back right from being a kid, it was always there. There was always that pull towards self-development. I don't remember not doing it.
Yeah. It's been quite a journey. And now here you are, feeling happy. How is it all going now? So you've been doing so much with your book. You started off with the kind of like an online course, and then it led into your membership, and then it's led into your book. There are 60 chapters in this book. Now, we could talk all week about this. We're going to talk for as long as we can to share, you know, more about it all for you. I kind of don't know where to start, because there's so many areas that we could talk about with your book. So one of the topics that came up was positive affirmations, and you talking about affirmations, really powerful. I think that was a really powerful example when you were talking about your affirmation of, you know, that you, I am going to, you know, do your acting work and everything like that. So I thought I'd bring in the affirmation of the day, and then perhaps talk more about how affirmations and limiting beliefs in relation to your book and things as well. So today's affirmation, we always pick up a positive affirmation card in the podcast from Happy and Calm Cards. Today's one is, I am calm, I can stay calm. So what would be really nice for you listening, have a think, what does that mean to you today? Holly, what does it mean to you today?
That's a really good one for me, because I often describe my experience as chaotic. It can be quite a chaotic whirlwind of a human. And I don't say that as necessarily a negative. But this week, I have been focusing on a slowness. And one of my affirmations this week is, I'm not in a rush, because I rush everywhere. I rush everywhere, and that doesn't create calm. In fact, I've literally, over the last six months, I sprained both of my ankles. And the reason for that is because I run everywhere and I'm chaotic. And so that, to me, the sense, even the word calm does something to my psyche. So when I say, and you said there, didn't you, I can stay calm. Mm-hmm. That I can feels really powerful as well to me, that I can, because as I've just described, a lot of my story surrounds my chaos. But I can stay calm is it feels like a nice shift for me. I can stay calm. If I choose to stay calm, like, it feels like a different reframe. So I love that. I will have that in my repertoire this week.
Oh, very good. I think, yeah, that's nice. I am not in a rush as well. And something, I wonder if we're going to pick a page, like, oh, what page do we need today? But when you were saying about, not being in a rush and everything, what's really nice is each chapter is bite size. So it doesn't take long to read. And one of your chapters is called Do Nothing. And do you want to share a bit about that philosophy? Because it's a little bit what you're saying there.
Yeah, Do Nothing chapter is one of the things that is, it's really important for me as a person. And it's also counterintuitive to everything that my personality is, because I'm such a doer. I always want to do. But as we will know, and as I talk about in that chapter, that's not always beneficial to us to do, do, do. And we live in a society which teaches us to keep busy, to keep going, to keep doing, to keep pushing. And that includes in our difficult times, keep pushing, keep doing something, even keep doing self-development, keep doing. And actually, sometimes that isn't the answer. Sometimes do nothing. Sometimes literally just sit and do nothing and stare into space and zone out. Or do nothing when a challenge arises. You know, sometimes it's do nothing. I remember being with working with a counselor many years ago, and I was describing a very, I was catastrophizing a situation. And that means exaggerating it to its fullest extent, like bigger than it really is. And so I was talking about a family dispute that was happening. And in my mind, in our negative brains, our negative anxious brains can create the biggest carnage, can't they? That's going to be the worst thing in the whole world. And I was creating essentially that if I didn't micromanage everybody in that situation, that there would be a brawl to the death. Like, that would literally be what would happen. It would be a brawl to the death and everybody would be murdered. I mean, the most extreme nonsense. I didn't logically think that, but my brain was taking me to those places. And I was feeling this sense of always having to be involved in somebody at this drama. And the counselor said to me, what happens if you do nothing? What happens if you do nothing? And obviously my brain, and what I said to her was, well, everybody will kill each other. And she was like, is that true? And obviously I'm a realistic, honest, logical human. So I was like, obviously not. No, of course it's not true. Not really. Mm-hmm. And it really sticks with me. What happens if I do nothing? So sometimes when we are in our difficult times, that is an answer. It doesn't feel like it because society teaches us that we should be doing something. But sometimes nothing is the answer. Just ride it out, ride the wave, or do nothing in the respect of sit in the garden and do nothing. Because we think this stuff is not productive. But as you know, with your work as well, whether it's meditation or some form of mindfulness, we actually are way more productive when we set time apart to do those things. Mm. In fact, a client of mine today has decided that she's going to go and jet off somewhere in the UK, just on her own, on a whim, in a moment, because she can't come up with the solutions in the house that she's in, because she's in the fog of her challenges. She can't come up with the solutions there. And everybody around her wants her to do, push harder, do more, and that will fix the problem. And we discussed whether that was true, and we decided it wasn't true. And that actually the science doesn't even back that up as being true. That we are far more productive if we do nothing for a time and we actually allow space for that. But I think we often feel guilty about that, don't we? We feel guilty about stepping back in whatever that looks like, or doing nothing, or not being so hands-on. So I think that that chapter is really about us exploring and giving ourselves permission to do nothing.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting one. I think I'm a little bit like you naturally, as in very inspired and entrepreneurial and love absolutely very passionate about the work and everything. However, I've ended up, I think you get to a point where you realize how beneficial it is to do nothing, or just to go for a swim, or go to the beach, or as you said, be in the garden, or just be, really. And you know, one of your chapters is nature, not Netflix. Now, I've actually banned myself from Netflix and films for the last week, not because I do love watching Netflix and films, by the way, but because I've been reading your book.
Funny.
So it was really, really nice, actually. But
there's a balance, isn't there? I think there's always a balance. And all right, I'm saying niche.
Exactly.
I love a binge watch on Netflix, but it's about getting that balance right. If there's only one thing, then we do feel out of sync. And being out in nature is so, there's just something so raw and real about it. Like my kids have been laughing at me this week because I haven't wanted to wear shoes this week. I just haven't wanted to wear shoes. Shoes have been annoying me this week, and I've been taking every up because we're in flip-flop weather. I can get my shoes off very quickly. So everywhere I've been going, like obviously in shops and stuff, it's kind of frowned upon to be walking barefoot, but I like wearing no shoes sometimes. It just feels more grounding. But the kids have been laughing at me. They're like, why have you not got shoes on again? I'm like, I just don't feel like, I want to walk on the grass and I want to feel the grass on my feet. And they're very sweet because they have just been going, okay, just letting me be. But there's just something in that, like when you feel overwhelmed and not aligned with stuff, get outside, walk about bare feet, be in nature. There's something connecting about it. There just is. Whether that makes us sound like a bunch of hippies, and I don't care. I will hug a tree.
Yeah, yeah. Interestingly, there is. I mean, you even quoted it in your chapter in your book on nature, not Netflix, but about, you know, the benefit that, you know, there are lots of studies done now on how it reduces stress just going into nature. And, you know, I mean, that's just a wonderful thing to know, really. Dr. David Hamilton quotes quite a lot of research on the nature's benefits. Or even if somebody can't go outside, even having the plants and flowers in a room, and it also helps with recovery from, like, after being ill and things, it speeds up recovery. And it's just like, it's like, wow, that, you know, it really does us a lot of good. Now, something you spoke about was, you were giving that example of going off into that state of negativity. Now, you have a brilliant chapter in your book all about the busting of limiting beliefs. Do you want to actually sort of, I think it's chapter two, but yes, it is, chapter two. And do you want to just share with everyone, if they're not familiar with that language, what a limiting belief is?
Yeah, of course. So when we're talking about limiting beliefs, I mean, it is literally just a belief that is limiting you, holding you back. But we're often not aware, I think, that we're carrying them with us. And they often just sit in our subconscious. And then we walk about our daily lives making decisions based on them, because we've got our conscious mind. And I talk about this in the book. We've got our conscious mind, which is often the mind that sets goals and says, I want to do this thing. I'm going to go outside more. I'm not going to watch as much Netflix, or I'm going to do some Pilates. And this is our conscious brain. But if under the surface there's a belief that I always quit the things that I do, or people like me can't have this, or I'll never keep, or my body isn't strong enough to do Pilates, or whatever else the story is, doesn't matter how much your conscious brain tries to willpower you forward, you will not do it until you work out what the hell is going on under the surface. And it's those subconscious beliefs that are holding you back. When you dig them up from, you know, underneath, when you, it's almost like pulling a root out of a weed, you know, sometimes we just chop the top off a weed and that's not doing anything, not really. And sometimes we try to get through this stuff, but you've got to dig that weed out and you've got to look at it properly and you've got to go, where the hell did that come from? Who gave me that belief? Because that doesn't come from nowhere. And often a lot of the beliefs that we have, we've carried them for years. It was, you know, an off the cuff comment from somebody else or a teacher that talk down to or a narcissistic parent or whatever. We have these moments, these things, these experiences, and then we carry them. And sometimes the person that began that story in your head is no longer around, but you're still beating yourself around the head with that belief about yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of things we can do to, and I talk about them in the book, but there's lots of things we can do to start like just challenging those beliefs. And I still have to work on them. And I talk about them in the book, but there's still ones that come up for me. My story of I'm too much, that story still comes up for me sometimes. I'm too much, I'm too loud, I'm too in your face. I need to, you know, I had that my whole life, talks too much, does, you know, everything was too much. I have to be aware and we have to almost be on guard once we know what they are, because they will show up, they're sneaky. They will show up in a different story, wearing a different hat. And we've got to be aware that that will hold us back. If we don't keep on top of them, we will not be doing the things that we want to do based on this version of the world. And it just doesn't have to be that way. But we've got to know what's going on. We've got to name them. We've got to name thy enemy and all of that. We've got to know what's going on before we can find solutions for that.
Yeah. And you have, it's just really, it's golden, everyone. You've got to... You have a whole process of how to get rid of your limiting beliefs. And if, you know, somebody can really sit there with their pen and their notebook or journal or a piece of paper, and you really, it is really, they're just brilliant steps of helping people, as you say, dig up those weeds of those beliefs and those negative blah, blah, blah things you're saying to yourself. Like you were saying, you know, with our clients, like I regularly help people with back pain in particular, and people come along thinking I've got a weak back, I've got a weak core. Actually, yes, they have. They have got a weak back and core. I've never seen anyone with a back pain and problem who hasn't got some weakness going on. But the great thing is, you know, we can turn these things around to new beliefs. We can always turn them around to new beliefs, and it's, they don't have to battle with the new beliefs and affirmations, because if they're doing something about it, they're strengthening their back and they're strengthening their core and strengthening whatever else they need, then my back muscles are getting stronger, then they can really start to feel it, know they're practicing doing something about it, and they can gradually let those, you know, beliefs change and become a new person in that side of things, or whatever, as you say, it might be. But it really is fantastic. It really is fantastic.
The book, I really wanted to make sure that it was an actionable book. And for those that are watching this visually, you've taken lots of notes in your book, which I love. And lots of
notes everywhere.
I love it. That's what it was designed for. It was designed for us to use it and to, if love it, for it to be thumbed, for it be, you know, for it to be actually used. And so each chapter is only 4 pages long, as you said, and then at the end of each of those chapters there's the actionable stuff for you to do, because I think, you know, we can write lovely language and we can talk about the things that are going on, but then we need to actually find either some chapters it will just be something to think about, but sometimes it's something to actually go out and do or try or just get your mind whirring a little bit. But I was really, when I wrote the proposal for this book and decided it, how it was going to be, that even though I didn't have all of the ins and outs, I knew that I wanted it to be something that people could pick up, flick through, choose a chapter that felt like it suited. I guess a little bit like your lovely cards, where I wanted it to have that same feeling, because I think I like things to feel quite fun, so you can do things in a nice fun way, but also we don't, you know, we want things to be short, sharp and punchy when we are in our difficult stuff. We want something that's going to give us something to do now in this moment to try, so that we can see if that is the thing that just moves us to the next good thing, moves us forwards a little bit. So that was really my intention. And it's been so gorgeous to see people, you know, this is a, it's a month now since the book was launched, and just get people's feedback and people showing me the things that they're doing and hearing people's experiences. And it's just really beautiful. And also people buying it for their friends as well, which I always think, how, what a lovely thing to do for somebody that you care about, to be able to gift them something, some tools, because that's all you're doing. The one thing that I will always say is I am not the oracle of anything. Like I'm the guru of shit. Like I'm not, I have lived experiences and obviously training as well, but I have lived experiences that give me a certain understanding about certain things. And my, I guess, you know, coming from the acting background, my delivery and my ability to be able to speak and deliver things in a certain way that's easy for people to listen to is what, you know, sets it apart. But I'm not, my whole work is about you finding what's unique to you and what works for you. It's about you going through, you reading my book is giving you some ideas, but you'll take those and you'll run with them and you'll find your own route to that. And some of them you won't get at all. And that's okay as well. I don't have a massive ego where I'm like, well, you should do every single one in there and you should like every single thing in there. I don't have that, because that's not the point. The point of my work as a coach is to help people unlock things for themselves. And that doesn't work if I'm, you know, the puppet master over here trying to tell you how to live your life. That isn't what it's about. So I hope that when, and that's certainly been the feedback. In fact, one of the lovely reviews that I had, I'm not sure where it came from. It was one of the, it was an early reader on one of those review site things. And she said that she loved it because the book, although she got loads out of it and it was the, she didn't feel stupid, which was what she, well, I thought was really nice, because I wanted it to be as punchy as an Instagram post, but with the knowledge of a heavier text, just not feeling like that. And it was really nice for somebody to say, I didn't feel stupid. I didn't feel judged from it. I was like, yes, then I did something good, because that's what I wanted. I didn't want you to feel judged or like I'm not the same as you. I'm the same as everybody that's read that book. I'm a hot mess a lot of the time and I'm doing my best, and so is everyone that's reading it. And it, I think that's the key, really.
Yeah, it's so true. And I, like in one of your chapters about meditation, obviously you share about all the different types, and it's as you say, you know, pick a mix, take whichever one you want. But what I was like, yeah, high five, Holly. The your one of your tips is just take 10 breaths in and out. I was like, snap! High five, Holly. I was like, that's exactly what I teach my clients as well. Just literally close your eyes, sitting, standing, lying down, take 10 breaths in and out, and there you are. You've done your meditation a day. It takes a minute. And I was like, yeah, that's one of Holly's tips. So, you know, would you like to share like your take on, you know, some of the chapters are on morning routines, evening routines. You have, you call them a beautiful word, morning ritual and evening ritual. Do you have particular things that you love to do in a morning ritual for you?
Yeah. So obviously, as with everybody, they will shift up, they will change, and having children means your morning ritual is very much based on what they are doing. But I do like to try and set myself up in the best way that I can. And so it, firstly, I'm English, so a cup of tea is a must, right? A cup of tea has to happen. I need a cup of tea. That's my, and I always use having my cup of tea as my mindful time, where I will drink my cup of tea, I'll bring myself into the present moment, I will check in with myself or ask myself, how am I feeling? And that's really important to me. And this morning, I actually did a dance party, which was fun with the kids. I do, if I can, like to do some kind of dance wake up. And I mean, saying dance is like the loosest sense of the word. I mean, literally shaking it out, shaking my body, dancing around, just getting my body a little bit. That's really, really good for me. And that's something quite new, actually. I have been very mindful about my phone usage. That's a big thing for me. So not picking up my phone the second I wake up, other than if there's something that if there's a reason, as in I need to check in with somebody or something like that, or I know that I'm waiting on something, that's different. But now I mostly don't touch the phone until I've dropped the kids off, because it's too tempting. And all I will do is go down a rabbit hole of work because I love what I do, the second I pick up my phone, I'm starting to do something. Oh, I could do this, or I'll do this video. And before I know it, I'm late. The kids are late. Nobody's eating anything. And it just spirals my day. It's too addictive. Mm. I find it too much of a distraction. And I think 99% of us are the same on that one. So I think having something that just, I don't want it to be a restriction, because the minute I feel like it's a restriction, my brain is going to want to rebel at that restriction. So I am not ever lacking in compassion of myself, but it's always asking myself, is this a conscious thing I'm doing here, or am I just unconsciously scrolling, or am I just, so I'm really conscious with that. So I like to do a meditation if I can, but 10 breaths if not. So I tend to, like,
it still counts the 10 breaths, everyone.
And just nice, and it's okay if that's all that you've got in you that day. It is okay. I don't put judgment on that. And so just, I usually listen to a guided meditation, or I just listen to some calmer music, some piano music. I do like to have something on. I find it a little bit more challenging to have nothing. But what I also do when I'm meditating is I move. So I've really recognized, and I have ADHD as well. So I'm quite an active, quite a driven person. But rather than what I used to do, which is to try to stifle that movement and think, oh, that's not meditating, you're not staying still, you just need to stay still. Now I just lean into it, and it, not necessarily in a sort of yoga or Pilates type way, just moving, just swaying or rocking or whatever feels good, not putting judgment on the movement of what it is, just going where I feel like I want to. And I will only do a short meditation, like 5 minutes probably in the morning. Evening time is definitely about preparation for the day ahead. That's a big thing. So prepping, so clothes, things. I'm obsessed with whiteboards. There's whiteboards everywhere. They've got affirmations on them. They've got things I want to do on them. They've got just little cheerleading type posts for myself. So I leave myself a little note. Don't forget to eat is one that is written all over today, because I've got a busy day and I will forget to eat. So don't forget to eat. Make sure you're drinking water. Nice little notes to yourself. And you can put your affirmations. I write on my mirror and things like that. So part of my morning will be making sure that my space feels good. Definitely a cup of tea is a non-negotiable for me. Staying off my phone. And yeah, the wind down for me is about anything I can do that's nourishing. You know, when I'm taking my makeup off, and I'm quite into, like, what I would class as just faffing with your face. I'm always putting creams on or something. I just faff. But that feels quite nourishing, whether it's, you know, painting your nails or that kind of thing. And if I'm feeling particularly wired as I'm going to bed, I sketch and I draw. Or I do word searches. These are things that actually help me to just wind down. And I think I talk about it in the book. It's more like a dimming down of your day rather than just switching out the light. That doesn't feel, not most of us can't just get into bed and go to sleep the second we are in. And normally it's a nice slower pace, a dimming down of the day. So there's always some kind of dimming down of the day that happens for me.
Yeah, that's lovely. So yeah, I hope that has inspired you for you listening with you know, your morning routine, ritual, whatever you'd like to call it, and evening as well. And I, you know, like Holly was saying, you know, it's about finding what really feels good for you. And as Holly was saying as well, and I agree, you know, it evolves, like, you know, the dancing thing's a newer thing for you. And you know, we add different things in and we discover different things as we go along that we're like, oh, we're going to try this, try that, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter.
It doesn't have to be stuck. It's not set in stone, but it's exactly really acknowledging that in the morning, checking in with yourself is a good thing. How am I feeling today is a really important question. And what do I need? What do I need today? And sometimes it will be, I need to do nothing. I need to slow down. Sometimes it will be, I need to put my foot on the pedal. And today is about getting shit done. Sometimes it's about, I need some help with how I'm feeling. All of these things are valid. Don't gaslight yourself. These are valid feelings. You're allowed to feel angry. You're allowed to feel sad. You're allowed to feel happy, elated. All of these things are perfectly valid feelings. But you need to know what you're feeling. Because if you don't, if you squash down things, you don't check in with yourself, you'll be crying in Aldi later today, or you'll be shouting at your partner. And, you know, these things, we don't get to, like, bypass the feelings. They're still there. They're just in there and they're going to sneak out. It's going to be like that bubbling pan. The pan lid's going to burst off at some point and the water's going to spill out. So we've got to acknowledge that. And I think if we can, you know, top and tail the day on that, how do I feel in the morning? How do I feel in the evening? And what can I do about that? It's, that helps us to stay on track. And essentially that's a practice of mindfulness, right? It's just a check-in with yourself.
Yeah, that's a really good tip. That's a really good tip. It's a beautiful thing to do, the check-in. And, you know, and I think, you know, you, your work, your beautiful work, your incredible book, you know, it helps people during good, challenging and sad times of life. And, you know, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I was very excited to talk to you about it today. Now, in today's, every episode of the podcast, we do a meditation and we had a little chat before we came live, well, on the chat with you. And we decided, because in Holly's book, she talks about visualization and your ideal life. And it's really beautiful just to have a little daydream and about your ideal life. So we're going to go into this meditation next together. Now, Holly was obviously talking about how you love to move in your meditations. So you can do this, please don't say driving in the car, but you can do it sitting, lying down, you can do it walking along, you can do it moving, like Holly was saying, do it however you like, because as Holly said, you don't have to stay still, and you can do it, yeah, just listen to your body, and as Holly was saying, you know, what you need and what feels good. So anyway, you're going to go into the ideal life meditation now. Really hope you enjoy it. So welcome to the ideal life meditation. Choose how you'd like to listen to today's meditation. You can do it sitting, lying down, walking along, moving around. You choose. It really doesn't matter. So you can have eyes open, of course, if you're walking along or moving around, or you can simply close your eyes and lie down or sit comfortably and breathe and relax. Whichever way you're doing this ideal life meditation today, just breathe and relax throughout. So you're going to breathe in through your nose and breathe out through your mouth, relax. Relaxing your shoulders, happy shoulders, and relaxing your tummy. And just imagine your ideal day and your ideal life. A life that you'd love to be living right here, right now. Now, you might already be living this, but there may be things that you'd love to bring into your ideal day and ideal life. And this is the perfect opportunity to daydream about this. And just breathe and relax. This is a perfect day for you. Exactly where you'd like to be living, how you'd like to be being in your life, time just for you, and your ideal time with family, ideal time with friends, perhaps pets, perhaps other people's pets. And just allow yourself to daydream that anything is possible as you daydream right here, right now. And just breathe and relax. There's this inner contentment and happiness. You've got this inner smile and you're feeling happy, relaxed and calm and excited about your ideal life. Yeah, take a little look around about where you're living, where and how you're working, and how your life and work has transformed. And because you're doing that, look what that means has happened for you. Has this beautiful ricochet effect as you breathe and relax. It's like a little pebble has landed in this calm lake and it ripples out. And all these rippling effects out are all the amazing ripples that you're creating in your life and your work and your transformation. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you do this, you can spend time daydreaming about your ideal day. And other times you can make it even more expansive and daydream about your ideal life. And you can think about this with gratitude and say thank you for, and you fill in the dots in your mind. Just allow yourself to get creative and be childlike with this, that anything is possible in your daydream of your ideal life. And breathe and relax. And giving yourself permission to order anything in that feels good for you, or anything that you need and would like to bring in. Allowing that to come in now into your thoughts and daydreams. And just carry on breathing and relaxing as you do this. Five more times. Just saying thank you for your ideal day, your ideal life. And you can take yourself back to this beautiful place anytime you like. Beautiful meditation. You can do it with the audio. You can just do it cozy in bed at night before you drift off to sleep. Or you can take a few moments or minute or two for a little break to recharge your batteries in the day as well, if you like. Whatever feels good for you. Thank you so much for this ideal life meditation today, and sending you lots and lots of love. So we're just back from the ideal day and ideal life meditation. I really hope you enjoyed that. How are you feeling after it? And I really hope it's given you a chance to daydream about your ideal day or your ideal life. I was doing that with clients this morning. They were just either stretching and just having, so they were actually doing their stretches and doing their visualization earlier. So they were like doing a hamstring stretch. And then once they're in a good position and breathing and relaxing or moving on the stretch, they were then having a think about, they were having a daydream about their intentions for the day, or a small or big personal goal, or they could do, a lot of them wanted to switch off from the worky goals at that moment. So we'd love you for you to connect with us and share how you enjoyed today's meditation. So yeah, I'd just like to say thank you, Holly, so much for coming on today. Before we do some final words of wisdom, what's your website where everyone can find you?
It's iamhollymatthews.com/allmystuff. If you go on there, you will find all my stuff. So you will find my podcast, my book, any events I'm doing, you'll find on my social media, all of that stuff. I tend to hang out on Instagram, and I also have a free Facebook group, the Happy Me Project Facebook, which is separate from the membership. There is a wider group as well where people can hang out. And I also have a podcast as well, which I inconsistently upload on, but it's there. We don't have to be perfect, everybody. It's there. There are lots of episodes for you to chat and you to churn through. And I'm sure I will, when I feel pulled to, upload lots more. So I'm hollymatthews.com/allmystuff.
Yeah, that's lovely. And don't forget to get a copy of Happy Me Project. And as Holly said, it's a definitely a gorgeous, gorgeous gift. So as I say, you've got 60 words of wisdom in this book. If you can only share one to finish today, what would you like to feel like you want to just say as a last final word?
Okay, let me think. I'll tell you one. The one that I'm, and not that this is any in any way, there's lots in, as you say, in that book, but I think the biggest thing to work on for most of us is the bullshit stories that we tell ourselves. So it goes back to what we said earlier about limits and beliefs. You know, I'm a storyteller. I'm an actress by trade. That was my background. My whole life is about storytelling and how we tell the stories to ourselves, how we frame our challenges, how we frame our current situation. The story is everything. And if you are telling yourself a story right now that you can't have or you can't do, or people like you, if you are telling that story to yourself, I promise you, you will live that experience. If when you did that meditation, you had a different version, a nice version that you really want, then that's the story you need to tell yourself. And you can use the affirmations that you spoke about, you know, you can use them in a very, in a way that you're working towards, so you don't feel like you're bullshitting yourself completely. If you know you're not where you want to be, you haven't quite sorted out your back yet, or whatever else is going on for you, haven't quite sorted out that stuff, you don't have to completely lie and go, I have a perfectly wonderful, easy, comfortable situation, or my back is, I can do a backflip. We don't have to do that, because we would instantly go, our brain would go, that's bullshit. But you can say, every day I'm working towards getting my back stronger, or every day I am working towards building my confidence, every day I get more confident. We can do that, and that's about changing the story. But listen to how you describe things to yourself, listen how you talk to other people about your current situation, about yourself, about your body, about everything. Listen how you're talking about it, and see if there is a way to just lessen the intensity of the language, and see if there's a better story. See if you can let go of that bullshit story. I'm really, really tough on myself when I hear myself saying stuff that I don't want to be my reality. I will call myself out loud sometimes as well. And I'll say, this is bullshit. Why are you telling yourself that story? Just like I said about me being too much. My whole life, I told myself I was too much. I talk too much. And now my whole world is talking. My whole world is talking because I stopped making that a negative thing and I took back its power. And now I do what I want every day because I embraced that and I changed the story. So listen to the stories you're telling yourself. And you can even do an exercise where you write out the old bullshit story. What is this, the situation that I'm currently in, I don't want to be in, the story I've been telling myself, how I'm a crap person, I'm fat, I'm ugly, nobody likes me, whatever the story, a horrid story you're telling yourself that's mean and lacking in compassion, you're going to get that, then you're going to scrumple that up, chop it up, pop it in the bin it, get rid of it, and then you're going to write a new story. Literally write it out, journal it out, write out, what do I want it to look like? And you can use that lovely meditation that you just did as the basis for that new story, because no doubt you thought about all of those things. Get it written somewhere so you can look at it and you can refer to it and you can check in during your day. Am I walking towards this story or am I walking towards the bullshit story? And you can keep yourself in check that way. That would be my very, if I were going to pick one, that would be it.
Yeah, that's a brilliant tip and exercise to finish. Don't underestimate the power of that and the journaling side of that. And then, and as you say, when you add, you know, the visualization and the ideal life kind of meditation, or like you said in your book, that you every evening you have a little daydream about your ideal life. And it's so powerful because, as you know, as you said in the book, you know, our brain doesn't distinguish between what's real and what's imaginary. So, you know, it really is so transformational. So thank you so much, Holly.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
I really hope you enjoyed it so much listening. Lots of love.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mindfulness Pilates podcast. Please rate and review on your podcast platform. You can access my free healing meditation and Pilates to ease back pain in 3 minutes on my website. You can also book your reduced back pain to feel good one-to-one mindfulness Pilates program on Zoom or mindfulness Pilates membership by going to mindfulnesspilates.com.